thoughts. This is what I try to get people to look inside. There's where your answers are, and you are funny. You know, everybody thinks, oh, you're a stand-up. I don't have any training. My training was my mom belly danced in my high school graduation party. There's my training.
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
Well, here we are, debut episode. Thank you for checking it out. Story and Craft has arrived, and my name is Mark Preston. Maybe you know me, maybe you don't, but a little handshake to get to know you here, and thank you for joining the program. Been working on this for some time now, and finally, we get it off the ground, taken off with our very first episode. Now, right about here at this part of the show, usually, I'm going to just kind of check in with you and see how you're doing. Let you know what's going on with me and just kind of chat for a moment. But today, I just kind of want to get after it. I want to jump into our very first episode because I had a lot of fun. Craig Shoemaker, first guest, and there's a reason why. I wanted him to be the first guest. Known Craig for like 25 years or something like that. He is a really, really funny guy. Comedian, of course, actor, writer, producer. He's an author and even an entrepreneur. He's known by many as the Love Master, and if you are not familiar, YouTube, type in the Love Master and have some fun. Well, I don't know what's going to pull up. Hopefully you're pulling up something from Craig Shoemaker, but I don't know what happens on YouTube. Maybe other things show up. Not quite sure. Here's the thing. Craig has been on the scene for decades. Just making people laugh. He has won Emmys. He's won an American Comedy Award. He's still touring. Now, he's also had a lot of specials like Comedy Central, Showtime, Netflix, Amazon Prime. And right now, Craig is working on something pretty cool. He's working on laughter as medicine. Laughter is healing. And I think that's such a, especially in the times we're living in now, such a cool idea. We'll discuss that. Also going to talk about Bob Saget and Louis Anderson. And I think you'll enjoy this episode. Hey, don't forget, since we are just getting rolling, go to storyandcraftpod.com. That's the website. All of the social media links are there. And just make sure to, of course, as we get going here, go to Apple Podcasts, if you would, please. Subscribe, download every episode, enjoy it. But of course, give us a little review. You know, great guests again coming up. But today, it's Craig Shoemaker Day. So let's get after it right here on Story and Craft.
I'm doing much better. I got cough drop in because I got a little bit of a cough still.
Hopefully it wasn't the COVID, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry to hear that, man. But you got the...
It wasn't bad. It wasn't that bad.
But you got the vaccine and all that, so it kind of took the edge off a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, I'm fine. You know, it hit me like a common cold, I guess.
I think more people have had it and don't know they've had it. My son had it, barely bothered him, but he still, I mean, we're over about almost exactly a year later and he still can't taste 100%.
Yeah, so. That did not happen. I'm full taste buds and full smell. And yeah, so didn't get me bad. I'm not a guy that gets sick I haven't missed a day of work in 20 years until last week.
So how things been going over the last... my God, since the pandemic, I mean, here you are knowing your vocation. How have you been navigating going into clubs and stuff like that? Has it been a kind of a challenge at all?
Challenge, to say the least. I mean, you know, I'm in a business where people are not socially distanced. They're laughing, just, you know, spreading out those germs.
Spewing good stuff right at the stage.
Spewing on each other, and people are afraid to go out. And unfortunately, my audience in particular, which is, you know, over 40.
Are we really that age, you know, now?
It's like yeah, we're at that age. We're at that age where when they're giving you those statistics on people that end up in hospitals, and, you know, it's us, you know, so... I'm personally not dialed into that energy, that fear energy at all. Like, that's not my jam, but I can't convince other people that that's, you know, the way to live is to live. The way to live is to laugh, you know, live to laugh. And what it does for your, you know, where you're healing, you literally, I have an organization called Laughter Heals.
Yeah, I meant to ask you about that. How long has that been kind of an endeavor of yours?
about 20 years. My friend got brain cancer. You know, gave him 3 months to live. I formed it, and it's what's happened lately, though, is if you've noticed, the world is doing the opposite. They're cutting out the laughter. They're censoring the laughter. They're canceling the laughter. They're so on top of that, where that's like the mandate now. It's like, let's find evidence to cancel another comedian for words that he said in the past, words where he or she says now. Whatever it is, it's like, so we're letting, you know, corporations, you know, poison our water, our drugs, opioid addiction. That's okay. They don't get canceled. But tell a bad joke. Tell a joke that someone's offended by. No one's offended by poisoning, toxicity, all this negative stuff, killing, all of that. We mindlessly accept, and yet we're after the comedians. Censorship, you know, we're on a podcast. I guess I can curse.
Indeed, yes.
You can't curse because some illusion is that it's going to destroy lives because you said a word that's offensive to someone because they've been programmed that it's offensive. So,
you know, it's ironic they'll pay for a ticket to a movie.
Really, I want to shift the paradigm. I mean, I really do. I want to shift this paradigm into we need to focus on the positive, on the laughter, on the joy, on the happiness, pursue happiness, as they say you're supposed to, but they're really not about that at all.
That's actually a note I made to myself. I want to ask you about today, the whole cancel thing, but Bill Maher, I think, has been kind of on point talking about this, talking about how, you know, I along with my kids, I, you know, trying to be as safe as possible during the COVID times, but we've been vaccinated. Now we're kind of at a point, we got to get back to it, but as far as what you're talking about, the whole cancel thing, what do you think, as far as, let's go back in time, let's say a Sam Kinison, you know, the guys that we were paying attention to in the 80s, they couldn't exist today, you know. Is it the internet? Is it just change? I can't quite figure out what that is. What is your take on that?
The internet definitely is a big impact because now everyone has a voice. You know, I used to spread the word about my shows through word of mouth, through postcards, through... You know, I mean, this is how I built a career, and it was just based on talent. Now it's based on trends. It's not scalable, sustainable. It's just everything's temporary trends and fixes and temp fixes. This is how we're operating right now, where we don't have a strong base, a foundation of who we are. So who we are is predicated upon a trend or so what someone else feeds back to you, the amount of likes you get. So we've taken our own sense of self. I'm actually coaching this now. I am so dedicated to this shift, this paradigm shift that needs to take place right now. To me, it's a spiritual rebooty call that we're going through right now. That's what this pandemic has done. This has taken all the politics and everything else and just put it on steroids. And now you're either going to retreat, which people are doing with distancing and masking and rules and mandates. That's the retreat. That's the response. That's the fear response. Or you can immerse yourself in truly becoming a better person, a more healthy person, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically. That's the direction that I choose. And that's the direction I'm choosing to coach now. I'm working with clients, personal clients and classes, because look, it's great that I've done all this laughter. I probably brought a billion laughs to people. That's a really cool thing.
Absolutely it is.
But I can't rest on those laurels. I got to go, okay, what was that all about that led to this? These experiences led to, I get to share this gift now back. I get to give it back.
Yeah, but you're at that age now where you can kind of look back on in the rear view and go, okay, now I've done this, 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 and this. What's that culminated into? You know, it's an opportunity now to kind of... Perspective, isn't that what age gives you? A little bit more perspective. And I was thinking about the comedians that I was, especially, just in the last couple months, you have Norm Macdonald, Bob Saget, Louis Anderson, these are guys who in the, I'm not saying they're necessarily on the Mount Rushmore of the 80s comedians, but these are guys that had a tone and had a vibe. And it seems like now comedians, I mean, there's a lot of great guys out there, don't get me wrong, but everything seems more homogenized. Does that compare it to...
It makes sense in a way, and tend to sort of go that way sometimes, but then I step back and I look at, it could be one of those cases where we're going the good old days and all this kind of stuff. But like you asked me a question, a lot of people ask me, like, could Kinnison or Rickles even exist today? The answer is absolutely yes. And they do exist today. They are constantly, there are comedians pushing the envelope constantly. They're just, they are the Kinnisons of today, the Richard Pryors of today. They still do exist. There's a pushback, though, from society. And like I said, it's a cancel of actual laughter and comedy, because what that is you're really tapping into your true self. And the corporations, the people in charge, the system, the paradigm that's in charge right now, they don't want you to be yourself. They don't want you to have this power within that we all have. They don't want this light and levity. They want to control that so that you get in their line. I'm writing a new book called Get Out of Line and Into Alignment. And if we're in our own alignment, that's going to inform what we laugh at. That's going to inform where we gravitate towards, where our energy goes. That's what will dictate it when we're in line, but we're out of these lines because we're in their line. They tell us how to get in line. Now, the mandates and the rules lately really, you know, it started with TSA, by the way, which is a bunch of crap. You know what I mean? Like, you can have 3 ounces, you can't have 4 ounces of a liquid. I mean, all of this, you know, because one guy with shoes that were going to explode, but it really didn't. So everything is in chaos and disarray. And then I talk about, like, when I'm on the tarmac, get off your cell phone. I said, why? You know, oh, you're going to interfere with the radio waves from the tower. I said, meanwhile, there's 900 people, you know, 50 feet away in the airport on their cell phone, but 8B took the plane down. You know, like he's trying to back up, going, I'm trying to back up, 8B, you're interfering with me. It's so ridiculous. When you break these things down, it doesn't make any sense, but we don't have the wherewithal anymore, the common sense, the new thought to actually break something down to what it really is. Mm-hmm. This whole pandemic has been, there's a lot of corruption going on here. And we don't even want to research it because now they have a new word called misinformation, or they have a new word, the old word that the CIA came up with is conspiracy theory. You get that label affixed to you, it goes in the internet, and bye-bye conversation.
Yeah, there's that whole cancel thing that's going on. I don't remember that ever being a thing. I think most people like, that's kind of ridiculous, whatever, on to the next thing. Now, don't get me wrong, there's some people doing some knucklehead stuff that probably do need to be called out occasionally. But, I mean, when it comes to comedians, I look back to George Carlin. I remember when people say, he's just really snarky and he's just, you know, he's old. Boy, was he right, huh? You know, it's almost like he had this predictive sense of what we were heading into. I think, because I think comedians almost have, in a way, a social commentary. It's not a responsibility, but, you know, if you're a comedian, you're not beholden to, you know, I worked in media for years. I don't think anybody ever told me to say something or not say something, but most certainly if you keep going one direction too far, they're going to try to reel you back in.
Sure they did. They have an FCC that controls you.
That's true. Yeah, those 7 words you can't say.
Absolutely they did. There's way more than 7 words. It's amazing to me. But if there's money behind it, like if I talked about on your radio show, one of your old radio shows, right? If I talked about boners, erections, You would go, okay, it's a family show. That would be your response. That's your conditioned response. If you cut to a commercial with erectile dysfunction because there's money behind it, people are so mindlessly accepting of this with people in separate tubs. I got to explain to my kids or what an erection is. I have to explain to my kids now. But if I joke about it, they'll throw me off the air. Or I do the Love Master with innuendos, you know, baby, you know, it's I'm doing the Love Master. People go, hey, it's a family show. I said, family show. How do you think you have a family? If you have a family from sex, you had sex, didn't you? You know, here's a guy that's joking about it.
They'd say in the morning shows, you couldn't do that. But the irony is that's when the parents have the most control over the radio. If they're in the car, they can manage, you know, what the kids hear. They said, well, it's safe harbor after 7 p.m. You can do pretty much whatever you want. And that's the time the parents have no control over the radio. The kids are in the room listening to whatever. So, you know, the rules weren't really balancing out to the intended intent, you know.
But who's coming up with the rules?
A bunch of white guys in Washington. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Who comes up with the rules? And the rules are all about control. That's what the rules are about. If you dissect the rules, if you jump back on the rules and you go, okay, what's this really about? This is about they're trying to control me. This whole thing with the pandemic, I couldn't go into an open park, you know, and that was the rule. Like they were throwing me out of parks and golf courses, you know, with all this open space and vitamin D and sunshine. None of it made sense. But if you say something about it, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're a rebel, you're not doing your duty, you know, because they decided that this would be your duty is to stay indoors. And that's what it doesn't make it right because it's a mass, you know, mandate. It doesn't make it right.
Well, you living in Los Angeles, you've had kind of a front row seat to probably more regulations in this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we all kind of were at the beginning. We're like, okay, what do I need to do to make sure I'm safe, family's safe, the people around me are safe? Then the data started rolling in, and then the vaccine came out. We did what we should do. You know, what made the most sense.
Oh, by the way, the vaccine came out, and people acted like it was a panacea, and everybody still gets sick. And then they hear from the, you know, the powers that be, well, it's sick, but you won't end up in a hospital and die. You know, so everything completely keeps flipping and flipping and changing. But what doesn't change is we're empowering these people to dictate how we live a healthy life. And there's nothing about, this is why you were talking about Bill Maher earlier. Look, I'm not a fan of him personally. He's really not a nice guy. I like nice people. He's not a nice guy. I've known him for 40 years. Not a nice guy. Not my jam. You know, we don't hang. But I watch his show. And I cannot believe some of the things that he's saying that I'm feeling. And that's what comedians do, is we are curtain pullers like Toto in The Wizard of Oz. And we're going to show you the charlatans. You're not going to like
it. See,
that's
the best way to put it. I was just saying that you're social commentary. But no, I think pulling the curtain back and actually kind of, it's a really raw look at what's going on in the world. I met George Carlin. That's what he did.
We examine in a way that has freedom to it. You know, we have the freedom. We are artists, and we answer to something within. We don't answer to the outside. Most people listen to the outside. Outside forces that dictate how you feel, how you think. I mean, even the cursing is all dictated by them. It's ridiculous. If I called you a fnifna, in my language, that could be the worst F word ever. But it means nothing to you. You're laughing. I just called you a fnifna. You have no idea what that even means. But in my language, from some FCC in my other European language or whatever it is, that could be the worst thing that's banned from the radio, but it doesn't mean anything. It's all the meaning we put to it that they put to it.
You know, Penn and Teller did a great episode of their TV show, Bullshit, where they talked about language. It was such a great episode. It just, at the end, you're going, yeah, that is kind of silly. I mean, people will complain, but they'll pay money for a movie ticket where there's all manner of colorful language. You know, it's like, well,
oh, yeah.
I think right now that people, I think in general, both sides of the aisle, the political spectrum, whatever, you know, I think that everybody, having grown up, you know, in a kind of, you know, more liberal side, grew up in a more conservative area in Texas. And I think what's happened over the course of years is, you know, people feel more and more carte blanche to tell you how to live, you know. And to me, comedy was kind of that freedom. You go into a comedy club, this kind of dark space that's, you know, you grab a beverage, maybe a cheese stick or whatever, you know, a $20 basket or whatever they're selling you. And you can sit back and you can kind of just depart and you kind of could laugh at yourself a little bit.
And look at how people resist even going. They'll pay a lot of money for a prescription of a drug that was manufactured with chemicals. You have no idea what's really in them. You don't know if they're addictive. They've obviously caused deaths and deaths and deaths. And that's okay. You'll pay any amount of money. But ask for a $25 cover charge for laughter being the best medicine, coming for your medicine. There's your pharmacy, and how people resist. It's the last on their list. We're essential workers with medicine, and yet comedy clubs closed down. We had to go to Zoom. We had to adjust. And here we are just wanting to offer something that's an alternative to what you're getting on the news. The news is 24/7 fear. And then they have the commercials. Every commercial has to do with the fear that they just gave you, the anxiety they just gave you. This is, we got your fix for you. But the fix is never joy, laughter, happiness, levity, laugh. It's never the answer.
Because laughter is more relief, and I think what they're looking for is passion. I teach you know, voiceover to many students over the last 20 years. And one of the things I talk about, I said, passion motivates. In advertising, you look at they say sex sells. You know, what really sells is passion. You know, you look at a political ad, you know, it makes you angry or inspired or fearful. And over the course of years, I've learned, and the people that I've watched that I admire, you know, the whole idea is kind of distilled down to make decisions from love, not fear, and you're probably going to be in a better place. And to me, when you talk about laughter, that is, what does it relieve? Is it serotonin? What is it? What do they say?
Dopamine. Yeah.
And, you know, laughing for me, or just experiencing, it's kind of a relief. It's a weight off the shoulders. And I can't think of any time that's more applicable or needed than over the last couple of years. To talk about one more Bill Maher note, one of the things he keeps talking about, I wish more people would, the comorbidities with COVID. Talk about people who look at people that are of a certain age, who haven't been vaccinated and are overweight, 80, 90 percentile range.
But take the vaccination out of it. Take that vaccination out of it. We are unhealthy.
Oh, indeed.
And here's the other thing. I peeled this one back that no one wants to hear about. People talk about Fauci's been there for all these administrations. What does that tell you? He's also overseen the worst health in the history of the United States. For 30 years, we've declined. Does anyone want to talk about that? Are you going to call me a conspiracy theorist? That's just the fact that we are more overweight. We're obese. We have diabetes. All of these things that are self-inflicted because we eat these horrible foods, and we're encouraged 24/7. The biggest people with all the money have crap that they're selling us. We're literally eating crap, and yet comedians are going to get canceled. Don't go see this comedian because they told a bad joke. You know, you could have a bad burger. You get food poisoning. We've all had food poisoning, right? Now you'll go right back to the place. But you get a bad joke and you're done with that comedian. I remember I said something political once and this guy goes, I'll never watch you again. I'll never pay a dime for you. Because I said one thing that he didn't understand and he didn't have the wherewithal to look within himself or examine it closer or even have a conversation about what it was that bothered him. He would just much rather, which we're taught now, just abandon yourself. Just abandon everything. Just to go with a party. I watched this movie, King Richard. Did you see King Richard?
No, I have been wanting to see it, though.
Well, there's a scene where a guy has a gun to his head, and it's a gang member, and I said, smoke him, smoke him. And I thought to myself, you know how we look at gangs, we go, oh, that's so horrible. And I thought to myself, you know what? That's what people do every day. Religions do it. You're going to smoke people that smoke, metaphorically, whether it's killing them literally or just killing them figuratively. We're taught to get rid of things instead of like having compassion, having an understanding, all that. That's what we're taught, smoke them. So we're all in gangs now, right wing, left wing, smoke the other one. If I say one thing that's outside of my alleged party, oh, look at you, you join the other party? Do you have any thought, you know, who's telling me this? I mean, do you have any thought that's outside of your box that you're in, that you're fed all of this information and you're fed the information to go smoke them, smoke them? That's what we do in gangs now. Religions do it and parties do it. Party politics. That's what they do.
I mean, we're more than binary. You know, I think that's the big screw up in our society is that you're either this or you're that. There's gray area. And as we grow as adults, remember, that's like one of the things that kids think black and white, good and bad. Well, there is gray area. You know, people want to make decisions. They want to put you in a box. I don't know the psychology. I'm no psychologist. Give me 6 years. I'll get a degree. But no, to break it down, what exactly is going on, what has kind of changed. I remember when I was younger, you could disagree with people politically, like, ah, you're full of it, whatever, let's go grab a beer. You know, and that's kind of where it stopped. Now it's a rage thing. And I think that when you talk about laughter, you talk about humor, you talk about the levity that that brings. I think there's kind of a balanced diet of emotions that we have on a daily basis. And if all of it's kind of, especially the last couple of years, fear and stress, and everybody's been dealing with it, and then you don't have that levity, you don't have that, even if the supposed comedy is kind of gnarly, I think it's going to put us in an overall bad spot for being able to be empathetic to one another. But that's
absolutely. And you're canceling your own joy. You're just canceling. That's what you're doing, is you're going, I'm going to limit my joy. There is no limit to joy and happiness. There's no limit. We live in abundance. But the world will tell you that you live in limitations and you live in their walls and you must go under their rules and don't defy their rules. Where comics, what I love about being a comic is we are true independents. We listen to a creator within ourselves. And that's what informs us. That's what, you know, has us speak. That's what has us speak our mind, our thoughts, whatever it is. We are expressing it freely. What's happening now, you know, this whole Joe Rogan thing is exploding. I'm going to tell you what it is. People are afraid to hear a different perspective than they're pounded with daily. They're pounded with something daily. So they are afraid. And this guy has brought in tremendous fear because he had like two or three guests on that went against the norm, which is absolutely abnormal. He had guests on. And that's what he's guilty of. To me, we should encourage him to have guests that have another voice and go research the voice. Go see if, you know, see if they indeed are frauds or whatever it is. But to cancel him is you're just canceling an entire side of yourself that you don't want to see. You don't want to see that you might have been fooled. People have such egos that they can't say to themselves, you know, I got fooled. I have to tell you, I'll admit something to you right now. I was a conservative, raised a conservative. And this is a label, by the way. I don't even like labels, but just for lack of another term. Went to liberal. I can tell you the exact day that it happened. And I became a liberal because of my empathy. Because I believe that liberals, that was their jam, is, you know, everybody's included and, you know, humanity and, you know, it doesn't matter color, it's, you know, but all that kind of stuff. That's what I'm about. That's my heart sings to me. So nobody can convince me otherwise. But the difference is I have now left the liberals because what they're as guilty of as the others is empowering people to dictate how they feel, how they think. They're just as guilty. They're just as guilty as labeling, canceling, gang thought, all of that stuff. The liberals are now guilty. So I am right, and I have my own party. It's called Centered. I'm centered in me. I'm centered in what I'll pull in my own information from within. Informs a lot of what I do. So I'm out of the party because everybody goes all in. They go all in. And like I'll say something that I said to a guy, I go, well, how come if I question like some of the stuff that's going on there? I said, why do people freak at me? He goes, because they think you're a Trumper. So that's where we are now. That's where we are now. That label gets affixed to you. And if you're not a Trumper, that's not a good thing to be a Trumper. You know what I mean? So we're divided so much so that there's no conversation going on. You can't get any better if you can't have conversations. If you can't get any better until you listen to creative artists.
One of the things I was curious about is when you go to when you're doing a show at a club. Now, how have cell phones changed the way you do comedy? Does it put you on edge a little bit knowing that somebody may whip out the camera, just film the 5 seconds that they pull out of context and it's gonna ding you?
You're right. It's changed it in a number of ways and not good ways. There's also the distraction of, can we all be together as one? Because when I perform, I take people like a orchestra leader. And everyone is in the orchestra. Every person is important in that audience. So if you have someone that goes solo, goes rogue, they're off, they're texting something, you know, they're out of the orchestra. You now do not have a harmonious moment because they take you out of it. One person can do it, by the way. So now with cell phones, it's a distraction. It's taking you off of your, like, I love to conduct this beautiful symphony. It's amazing to me. And, you know, you've maybe seen my shows, and this is not in a braggy way, but I get, you know, everybody says I get the, I'm the only one to get standing ovations just about every show.
Yeah.
And, you know, your club owners tell me that, waitresses, waiters. The reason is, this is not like I'm some, you know, great talent, but the reason is I conduct it like that. Like that we're all one. We are in this together, and bring them into that force field. So that genuine energy flow, which is what I teach when I coach. So if you're in that genuine flow and you take yourself out, so now what they've done is, so I'll stop the show, by the way, and I'll say, hey, what are you doing? You know, I do whatever I can do to get them off of this cell phone. But now guess what, Mark? They say, I'm just ordering. So now they order with their cell phone. So as much as that's a nice convenient thing, you don't have the chitter chatter of waiters and waitresses. Now you've got these bright lights, you know, that they have on their crotch. I said, it looks like a Smurf is giving you a head with this blue light. I said, you know, so it's just taking us away from the goal is to, we're having a night off. We're having a night off of distractions. We're all one. We're all unified. There's no political party. There's no religion. There's no judgment. There's no labeling. We're just in this. And that's what I love to do. And the cell phones take you away. But, you know, these days, some of the bigger comedians that have more power, they have you put the phone in some sort of like a purse or whatever, and you get it later because they're so afraid of their stuff being recorded.
Yeah. So, you know, it's almost the same thing of going to a theater now. Yeah, it's great having a big 75-inch TV. You watch your stuff. You stream it at home. But there is that communal feeling when you go to a theater.
Communal feel, yeah.
Yeah, when you go, when you're around other
That's
people.
That's exactly
now.
Right. And by the way, you know what really bothers me is when they film you, and I've been guilty of it as well. Like I went to, you know, my friend Ario Speedwagon the other day, and I'm filming. I'm going, what am I going to do with this? Am I going to, like, have a film night at my house? And go, let's watch me on my iPhone so I can show you what good seats I had, you know, and let's go listen to this through the iPhone, through a television. You weren't even there for the experience. When is it ever going to be shown? This is how silly we've become. It's ridiculous that we film. So now you're detached. You're spacing it. You know, okay, let me Zoom or whatever it is. Instead of taking in this music, taking in this art, taking in this comedy for what it is in its natural form, you're now getting in the way of that. So I don't want to be the cranky guy, you know, here, but I do want to encourage people to take a pause for yourself. Get off of it for just that hour and a half. I do a 90-minute show. Just join me. Just take 90 minutes.
Well, you've got young kids. I've gotten to the point, I'll snap a couple pictures and then I'm done with my phone. Then I'm watching whatever is going on. My kids are in their late teens now, but when they were younger, if you're sitting there with a phone, you're videotaping their play or whatever. It's like, reminds me of that scene from Daddy's Home when the lady on the stage before a performance, like, okay, everybody, don't worry about bringing your phones out. We have a videographer. You can get it after the show. And then, you know, every parent just whips out their iPad or the phone or whatever. Yeah. And but if you are looking at it through your phone, you're not looking at it and experiencing it, and you got to trust your memory a little bit.
You're not experiencing it. You're not in the moment. You're teaching your kids not to be in the moment. You're, by the way, the kids, this is the funny thing is, look, I'm guilty of it. I have never had one of my kids say, let's have family movie night. Let's see me in that pool when I was 4 years old. There's nobody's ever done that. I keep souvenirs for them. It's just projection. Because I'm thinking this is what I would have wanted. They don't. I have game balls that they, I said, let's have a garage sale. And I look and there's a pile of game balls. You know, it says Jackson Shoemaker, you know, number one today. He's like, just sell them. He doesn't care. They don't care about any of this memorabilia. They don't care about any of this because that's the way they've been raised. So we were raised, and we're projecting our own stuff onto them.
I mean, I think years down the road, they'll have perspective and go, man, maybe I don't want that.
I don't agree, because I've been asking and I've been checking this out. I don't agree. It's just a different society that we're in right now. There's so much of it. They've already been bombarded by posts, by, you know, the seeing it, you know, live, all that.
They've already seen it.
They don't have this longing to have, because it's a big bombardment anyway. I mean, it's like, which ones do you choose to show them? Which ones do they want to look back? Everything has been documented now. As opposed to, think about you. Think about you. Have you ever seen a video of you when you were younger? I've got like three, maybe. Maybe. And I don't even know
I wish I had some more. And you know what I wish I had more of is more like family stuff. Like people that are no longer with us. You know, like, you know, if grandparents around talking about whatever. I wish I had some of that kind of stuff.
A little bit
but
of that.
But as far as
exactly
me,
right. Yeah.
I got
yeah.
pictures. I know what I look like. I know what kind of goofball I was. You know,
it's how, right. it's how you felt, though, that's the most important thing.
These are the,
you know, I was talking to a client this morning, and you know, I do psychic work as well. You know, that's what makes a really good comedian is we have very deep empathy that we can see even into the past. And I saw into her past, and one of the things that happened for her was she stopped being her true self at a certain age. She stopped being a child, had to grow up really fast. And a lot of people do have that happen where it's like you're forced to grow up. And you're forced to take things serious, and you're forced to cancel your laughter. It happens at a very early age. You're taught not to be silly in class, right?
Yeah, I think it all can. It also happen when going through a traumatic relationship, going through a traumatic experience, and you kind of shift all your focus to the new paradigm, and you kind of leave something behind. You weren't really supposed to leave that behind. That's who you are. You know,
it's who you are is light and levity and laughter. So you know what I did with her? Her name's Beth. I call her Bethy, because Bethy was when she was that girl who was just all about love and light and happiness, and then it stopped. And she giggles every time I call her Bethy, Marky. Marky,
see
you
sweet.
Even giggled it. So, but that's when we're kids, when we're called with the E or the end, you know, then we become adults and it's Elizabeth or Beth or whatever it is. But I said, no, let's bring back that childlike essence that we all are. You know, kids laugh 200 times a day and adults laugh 20. So why don't we go catch the kids? You know what I mean?
Well, you grew up in Philly, and I know you still keep up with a lot of your friends. Isn't it great when you get together with your friends and they're still referencing? I talked to a good friend of mine last night. I've known him 30 years. He's kind of retired now. And talking to him, man, that's like a zips you right back to that, to your headspace and those people you can't BS because they know where your bodies are buried. You know, they know you. And that's a really, I know you got friends back home in Philadelphia. You stay in touch with them and they kind of keep you grounded, kind of keep you from getting a little bit too full of yourself, I'm sure.
Well, the other thing they do is there's your videos. The videos are through stories. And I'd much rather recall a story with them with laughter. Again, this is one of the things I coach is I say, tell me about some stories about you and your friends. And everybody has those stories. We all have, you know, our best friends are the ones that make us laugh and bring us joy. Are our best friends the ones that tell us, you know, that we're telling a bad joke or telling us that we should be canceled or we should join a certain party or we should listen to this? Are they our best friends? No, they're not our best friends. They're trying to control us. Our best friends are just simply... We don't care about politics. We don't care about the outside world that's chosen for us. We care about our world that we create together, and we have fun. I get together. I swear, my family, I'm sure, very sick of the stories when I get together with Uncle Saram, you know. But we will tell these stories till we are dead, you know.
I was about to ask you, do you tell your kids, do you sit down into something, like I take my kids, I grew up going to South Padre Island on the South Texas coast, and I took my kids there. It's become done it a few times, Christmas time, New Year's, we take them down there. And when I go to a restaurant or I see a thing, it'll bring back a memory of 40 years ago. And I don't know if they're like, oh, it's cool, I'm getting insight into my daddy. Or if it's like, Jesus, here we go again, I've heard this story 5 times.
Well, you know? I don't know it's funny, I've had that same introspection is I wonder, but I'm going to continue to do it because that's who I am. And by the way, the results are, they sometimes the results sneak up on you. Like, where do you want to go on vacation? You know what both kids told me? One of them said, I want to go, whatever our vacation is, I want to go to Pizza City. That's the pizza parlor I grew up with, and Tony is still there. And that's where he wanted to go. Like, literally, you could, I said, where in the world do you want to go? You want to go to Ireland? You want to go to Africa? What do you want to do? I want to go to Pizza City in Philadelphia, this small, tiny little pizza shop that's 60 years old. And that's what he wants. And then my daughter says, I want to go to the Jersey Shore. That's where I grew up going. So we live 3,000 miles from there in California with beaches and everything else. And we go to the Jersey Shore. So it is an answer to your question is, it gets into them because it's tradition. It's something that's very simple.
It's something they're connected to, you know? It's, I think they want that.
Yeah, exactly. There's a connection that's there. And it's a connection to dad. It's a heart connection. My friends are their uncles and aunts, and they know this. It's loyalty. It's something that you cannot teach. And my son to this day, the oldest son, 23, he says one of his biggest things is he says, I have my Saram, his friend Cade. I've got my Frank, and that's his friend Shay. You know, he has those for life. And he said, if anything I passed on to him, it was to value these things that are...
Indeed.
Yes, yeah. And it doesn't matter who Frank, who just passed away, by the way, last week, one of the saddest moments of my life.
I'm so sorry to hear that, my friend.
Unbelievable. I mean, it was such a shock. And, you know, and all the memories that came up, and, you know, at the funeral and the people speaking, it was all about how beloved he was because he was always a giving person. And that's his energy that he brought and instilled in others, and he was beloved. And that's,
I think, what's that phrase Native Americans have, that you die two deaths. One, when you're physically, you die, and the second is the last time somebody mentions your name. Mm-hmm. And I'm Jewish, and there's something kind of hardwired into that as well. You keep talking about people, it keeps them alive. I tell my kids about what would be their great grandfather. My grandfather learned so much from him, and I just keep talking, going, you know what? Maybe you're getting to that space in life also, is what are you leaving? What lessons are you leaving? What's your legacy, or what, you know, you get all highfalutin, and it really boils back down
great
to
question.
Like, how do you want, at least for my kids,
how would you like to be remembered? How do you want to be remembered? It's like, I want to be remembered for how I make people feel. And if I can inspire, uplift them, make them laugh, then I've done my job on the planet. And by the way, when I talk about my grandmother, I don't tell some phony story of, you know, honoring her. I tell the story about her being drunk and passed out on the floor, and my kids imitate her to this day. They've never met her, you know, they never will.
Is this the one with the loose joint?
I picked her up. With the joints. And she was a trip, man. And I'm going to talk about her. And that's how I honor her. She was not a grandmother that you revere, that has all this respect. No, she was a drunk, pot smoker, big Genesee cream ale, shit her pants. You know, I picked her up this one time, and she sees this guy that she would flirt with my friends. And she's upside down, and she looks at him. She sees him upside down because I've got her, you know, cradled. And she goes, is that Herb? Is that Herb? I don't want him to see me like this. And then she looks at him. She goes, with her flirty, she goes, hi, Herb. And I tell my kids that. And my kids to this day will go, is that Herb?
Well, you're touching on something that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, the whole cancel thing, expecting people to be perfect.
Yeah.
When you're telling real, honest stories, you remind your kids, you remind the people you're talking or speaking with, that, hey, these are imperfect people, but they occupy a space in this world, and they had something to contribute. They have sometimes it turns into a funny story. I mean, let's be honest. When you're a kid, some of the stories where you almost died and like, oh my God, it's catastrophic now, are the things you laugh about over, you know, a beverage or just, but I'm not encouraging, you know, potentially, you know, deadly activities, but the things you do when you're a kid, you can sit around. What's that phrase I keep seeing shows up on Facebook? It's, if you can't look back on your life and realize that you're an idiot when you're younger, you're still an idiot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That idea. But didn't you write on Fuller House?
Yeah.
Didn't you? Were you a writer? And I'm amateur budding screenwriter. Mm-hmm. It's just for me, it's fun. It's hobby. Maybe mm-hmm. one day I'll sell a screenplay.
Yeah.
Do you find catharsis in putting a story? This isn't on a stage. Naturally, the audience is a little bit different. You know, on Netflix, it's family-driven. But is there a catharsis in writing, crafting stories? You know, that kind of thing where you're creating or you have empathy for characters. Tell me what that's like to write and to create on when you're not on stage.
On that show in particular, like I had a writing session yesterday. I'm minting a NFT right now based on an animated project that I have with a big animator. And I got together in a collaborative sense with these people and we started throwing out things. And to me, that is a true joy. Like they laughed and said, that's a good one. And so one of my things stuck and that's really cool. You know, I came up with it on the spot. I then did an impression they had never heard me do before of Captain Picard. And I told a story and I made them laugh. And now we're in a collaborative process that's safe, it's fun, it's unifying, and so forth. I will tell you, honestly, the Fuller House experience was not that. The Fuller House experience was almost the opposite because, first of all, you have all these standards and practices, you have all these rules, all these definitions of what's clean and what's not. So when you're at your full self, you can just say anything. You know, you and I can say anything right now, and there's nothing that's filtered. You constantly have to filter because there's rules and guidelines you have to follow when you write a show. The second thing
that's a harder creative process, most certainly, because if it's easier to reel it back in, like I tell my students, I say, listen, I'd rather reel you back in than have to get my foot on your butt to get you to create.
100%.
You know, it's good just to kind of throw it all out there, then you kind of trim it out. That's why
when
they have
post-production. You've got the shackles to begin with, though, it doesn't work.
Indeed.
It doesn't work as well. You're not in, like I say, genuine energy flow. And here's the other thing is the people in the room are in fear that they have to go, they have to get the job next year. They're auditioning constantly. Writers are always auditioning for the job the following year.
Really?
Isn't that crazy? Oh, the entire time. So there's backstabbing, there's shaming, there's one-upsmanship. There's, you'll throw out a joke and someone else will say it 10 minutes later and that, and your joke ends up in there. You can't say, I came up with that 10 minutes ago. You know, it's an hierarchy. There's, you know, there's the bigger producers, it's unbelievable how it's not in flow. Now, the showrunner, Jeff Franklin, my old friend, he did a great job, I thought, and by the way, got fired, you know, from his own show that he created and under, you know, some pretty shady accusations. And, but there again, by the way, there is another hierarchy. They took him down. The people down here took him down because they didn't like the way he conducted himself, or they didn't like their own egos were hurt. And so it's an ego-driven business.
Has this always been like that in terms of writing? When you only had three networks.
Are notorious, except for like Everybody Loves Raymond is also notorious for the opposite. Uh-huh. Very, very, I happen to know a number of the writers and absolutely positive. They're out by 6 o'clock to get home with their families. You know, Phil Rosenthal apparently was like one of the best showrunners in history. And then you've got the others that it's constant angst and fear and control and power and all of that, where, listen, the results are they have great shows, but I'm letting you in on the process on the inside. Most of creative rooms are like that. They're not supportive. It's egos and fear. And when people are in fear, the results aren't so great. So, but obviously there's exceptions to that. And I hear Everybody Loves Raymond and some other places, you know, that they end up, you know, together for life. You know, I know Sandler has his crew, they're together for life. You know, you see that with the Will Ferrell group, although that just broke up from what I understand. Adam McKay and Will Ferrell over again, hurt ego and stuff like, I mean, Mark, are you looking at them going, really, you guys have cajillions, you've had unbelievable success, and now you're going to fight over this one thing and like not be friends anymore? To me, my friends are friends for life.
Yep, yep.
And certainly if there was a misunderstanding, I would straighten that out, but they are friends for life. And that goes to show you this transactional community that we're in Hollywood. It's a transactional community, which again is why I left the liberals as well. you know, I left, I'm not going to be a conservative either, but I left the liberals because it's a bunch of phonies.
Well, did you leave liberals, or did they, or did liberals move in a direction? I think, you know, we all grow and develop and evolve, hopefully, but you are here, but maybe the definition of what liberal or conservative is has changed. I remember growing up in Texas. I remember I grew up in a more conservative area. My family was more liberal. There was still discussion. Some of my favorite teachers would stop down the class, government or history, and you know, we would have discussions about whatever, and they wanted you to know how to think and express yourself. And I was fortunate to go to a really good school. But
yeah.
But as far as the Fuller House thing, before I don't, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Bob Saget. You know, it's funny having grown up in the '80s, and then seeing Bob Saget. Okay, Bob Saget was a dad, but I also saw him play. His stage act was much more blue, you know, but
completely.
and then after he passed away, he had all these people come. He's one of the sweetest guys. He was,
yeah,
there. It's, I realized, wait a minute, I never knew anything at all about Bob Saget outside of his kind of polar persona, but you know, being the dad or the blue comedy.
That's a very good, it's a very good observation. It is a polar persona because they're complete opposites. He dove into that too, but the true him. You know, I've known him since he was the deli slicer at Pantry Pride for my mom. So I've known him since he was before comedy. And then my first days in comedy were with him on stage. And he was already a little ahead of me. I was 17 and I started. He used to do a bit that I loved was he had a rig on his guitar. And he would like press a button and quarts of water would pour down from the guitar while he sang, "While my guitar gently weeps." And, you know, and then he'd say, "Bottle of red, bottle of white, that makes pink." He had these really silly, fun things that he would do with his guitar. And he was like the man back then. Then he went to Temple University. I ended up at Temple University. So I've known him since we were kids, basically. And he was always the same guy. He was always the same guy. No matter how big he became, he knew his roots. He knows about love and commitment to family, and that's who he always was, and that's why he was beloved. So playing that father was very much a part of him. And also playing that dirty guy is very much a part of him. He got to explore both ends. And it's crazy how much people have accepted that too, because a lot of times people would cancel if he went on stage and talked about sodomy or whatever he talked about.
Well, you know, I love this character he played on the movie or the TV show Entourage. And he played this guy who's just out of control. Hollywood guys like, well, is that more like what he's like? He's one guy. But after he passed, there was, I can't think of the comedian's name. You probably know, but he and John Mayer went out to the airport to go pick up his car. Bob Saget's car.
Ross, Jeffrey Ross.
Jeff Ross.
And Mayer, yeah. They went and got
that,
his car.
That was an enlightening and very sweet and kind of like a really cool exploration. I guess it was about 45 minutes, an hour long. And I watched the whole thing. I was like, how did I not know this about Bob Saget? You know, but everybody said he was a total sweetheart. He was a mensch. He did what he could to help you out. And to kind of take it to Louis Anderson, people said the same thing about him as well.
Oh,
and I kind of see this
this
through line that, and I had known that about Louis Anderson, that he on the down low would help people out just as a matter of course. But did you know Louis? Did you have just spend time with him?
Oh yeah, absolutely, for 30 years, and just a very giving spirit, a loving spirit, that was a wounded man. A wounded man who dealt with his wounds in a way of giving back to others. That was his jam. He was very present, a good person, you know, obviously some wounds that affected him for his entire life, including his, you know, obesity or whatever that he was dealing with, a lot of stuff. But one of the ways he dealt with it was to give laughter, give joy, hand that to people, and acknowledge you in the room. He was just one of those guys. Both of them had that in common, was they'd stop and acknowledge you in front of them. You know, even though in this crazy busy world of fame and people pulling on you and agents and producers and all that kind of stuff, they would stop and have these qualities that could not be compromised. And about both of them had that in common.
Well, you made a really good point. You said that there were wounds that he dealt with by helping people laugh.
Yeah.
And isn't there kind of this the Rubicon? There's this place you cross, I think, as you get older, that you could either be bitter and pissed off and angry at people that have done you wrong, or you can go, I'm going to be true to what it is that I am and who I am and do the best I can to leave the best mark I can. And sometimes it seems hard, but you know what? As much as you do it for others, it bounces back on you. That's what I've found, you know, and that's, I'm not saying I'm perfect. God knows we all have our flaws, but you know, it being a comedian, isn't that your part and parcel right there? You're taking your life and you're balling it up and you're coming together with ideas and whatever they're going to make people think. At the same time, you're going to make them hopefully feel better and be able to laugh themselves and go, this, it's really not all that bad.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
I'm teaching it now. Instead of just coming and performing and, you know, all that kind of stuff, which, you know, that inspired me in the past. I was inspired by people's attention and love and all that kind of stuff. But then it switched for me. And now it's switched into, I'm trying to get people, I'm teaching them how to alchemize their own humor, their own laughter, their own sense of self and turn it into gold. And this is what my purpose is now. And that's my legacy. That's what, if from now on, I'll still make people laugh, still do great shows, but it's just going to be
more intimate. Well, what about, like, is there a website that if people are like, hey, that sounds like something I need in my life?
Yeah, you go to craigshoemaker.com or enlightenedup.com. I have Enlightened Up podcast where it really is about shifting the paradigm from this fear and doubt and worry and disease. And it really is about my slogan is, we need to enlighten the fuck up. and my other thing in my bio now is, I'm still raw. I'm still Philadelphia. I still give it, you know, I've still got the angst and anger and all that stuff, but I'm also along this other path of peace and prosperity and abundance. So I'm stuck between namaste and kiss my ass. That's kind of where I exist. So, you know, it's our job on this planet to, you know, have these discoveries and do this expedition inside of ourselves. You know, when we project it to the outside, it's not going to do us any good. And I live a lot healthier that way and a lot happier. And that's the thing, is we don't pursue happiness. We thought the pursuit of happiness is not there. That's a misnomer. There's nobody that's actually doing that in our society, at the top of society. They are not encouraging that. They're discouraging it, if anything. So we now have the power. So I have an Enlightened Up group, actually. It's a private group. And you know what I have them do? I say, why don't you guys share your favorite funny movies and television shows? Like, you know how people deal drugs or they deal alcohol? They go, here, have a drink. I said, here, have it all in a family. You know, tell them about your favorite episode of
All
in the
Family.
Oh,
that's a show. Do you think All in the Family could be on TV right now?
that's something that people say, all the Rickles, they keep saying, you know, like, can it be now? Can it be now? Anything can be now. It's just, anything can be now, because now we have, you know, well, if they don't take you down, now we have the freedom of podcasts and so forth. And that is the one good news. There is nobody that's going to take your podcast down.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do have these freedoms. It's just that we need to get together and start a movement. This is one of the things I'm trying to do right now, is start a movement, a laughter movement, where our energy will take over. Where right now it's misery loves company. Right now it's all about, you know, fear, angst, worry, all that stuff. What if we, one by one, one person at a time, start forming this group that the only purpose is higher purpose, is to bring joy, laughter, and happiness, levity, and light to the world.
It doesn't cost you anything to do it.
It doesn't cost anything. So if you can gradually do that, and like I said, share funny moments. I'll have them tell funny stories of their past. Really getting to down to the roots of things is like, what made you laugh in your life? Why don't you share your joy instead of sharing some information about a political opponent that you don't like, or some guy who's hosting a podcast who 5 years ago dropped some N-words. Instead of sharing that to take someone down, let's lift someone up by sharing that.
It probably, in my mind, it takes a little bit less. It takes less effort to do that too. You know,
it does. It's, you know, no it, effort.
But you mentioned what's something
your
about
favorite.
Don Rick.
What's your favorite comedy movie?
My favorite comedy movie.
One that made you laugh. You wanted them to turn off the screen. I remember I had one. I was like, you got to shut that screen off. I can't laugh anymore. I hurt.
I think anything Judd Apatow has out there. I think the stuff, I think the movies he puts out, I think are just the best kind of ridiculous. We need more of that. We need more kind of, in my mind, rated R comedies that are just kind of like, it's nothing's meant to be taken serious. You know, that kind of a thing. I don't know why we don't have more of that. You know,
he does have some, by the way, he started by opening for me. I still have a mixtape that he gave me as a kiss ass present to, hey, can I drive with you to San Bernardino? So, and Dave Chappelle started with me when he was 14, and Whitney Cummings toured with me, selling my merchandise. A lot of these people, you know, I've either guided, mentored, or just blazed the trail. And it's amazing to me to watch them. I love that you just said Judd Apatow. I wasn't even expecting that. That's great. That's a real kudos to him, man. He kept at it, and he keeps on delivering.
This is 40. When that came out, he sadly with humor.
That's one of the really funny. Oh my God!
But the thing is, there's so much heart to it. I remember the way he brought his daughters into it. The way he had. You know, I got to an age where I try to think of somebody's name who I know very well, probably talk about him all the time. Who played the dad?
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd.
Oh, there's a scene in there. I thought I was going to die. I thought they were looking at tapes of my house. Like, did he had a magnifying glass looking for a hemorrhoid? I mean, I was like, are you serious? Or her smoking cigarettes, secretly smoking cigarettes? Did Judd send cameras to my place? I mean, it was like one of those movies. I remember laughing my ass off. My number one, by the way, is Planes, Trains, Automobiles. And it was one of those movies.
Two greats in that, yeah.
Just laughed my ass off. That's what I would encourage your audience to start trading, like trading cards, your funny moments of your life, things that made you laugh, share it with others. Then you get together and you go, yeah, you watch that. Oh, you watch Schitt's Creek. Yeah, me too. What's your favorite scene? All that kind of stuff. And watch the energy shift. Just watch the vibration change that you are creating now. You're not allowing others with their fear to create your space. You make your own space. This is what I try to get people to look inside. There's where your answers are. And you are funny. You know, everybody thinks, oh, you're a stand-up. I don't have any training. My training was my mom belly danced in my high school graduation party. There's my training.
You know? Well, I know you got to get going, my friend. I appreciate your time. But I got my, what I call my Preston's Lucky Seven, quick seven questions.
All right.
Something a little fun, a little insight. First question, favorite comfort food?
Oh, I'd say cashews.
Cashews.
I love cashews. I was just given the biggest, most giant bag I've ever seen in my life. I had to give them away. There were so many, and I just completed them literally yesterday. The bag with crumbs is right over there right now. I love cashews. I used to steal cashews when I was a kid. I had this big pocket in this jacket that I would wear, and I would throw them in there when I went to the local Acme market, and I would steal cashews. That's my comfort food. I love them, although they give me gas.
It's healthy. It's not chicken McNuggets or something, you know. Now, who are three people, alive or dead, you can sit down with for y'all over coffee? Who would you want to sit down with if you had the opportunity?
It wouldn't be coffee, because I never had a cup.
Okay.
Despise coffee. But let's say the metaphoric coffee, the tea, the water, the sit down, somebody that I know, or somebody that
know? You know, three people that just anybody, either, like, you know what, I would love just to sit down. For me, Judd Apatow is one of the guys I would love to talk. Of course, oh, okay. I've had a chance to talk to you a number of times, but somebody that you feel like you could learn from, that you have a conversation.
Bruce Springsteen, without a doubt. Someone just got me a book of Bruce Springsteen and Barack Obama, their conversations. So I'd say Barack Obama. I think that he and I, believe it or not, have a very similar background. And someone pointed out to me that some very successful people come from single parent families because we had to try harder. So Springsteen had a missing father, basically. Obama, same thing. I'd like to sit down with them. And let's see about a woman. There are several women that Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep is a genius of a different level. She is a whole other level. And
Don't Look Up. Did you see Don't Look Up?
I did. And I also saw outtakes where she did 20 different conversations on the phone. That she made up on the spot. You should see this. Adam McKay put it out. It's 20 different, completely different conversations that she's having on the phone. Made every one of them up on the spot. It took her to a whole other level for me.
Like you saw improv. That's not something you would expect from her. That's Jedi.
No, she's Jedi. She's a Jedi master. I would love to sit down with her. And maybe even make out with her too. I'd like to make out with her.
Yeah, why not? Why life, my friend,
she's
is short.
She's very sexy to me because she's so talented. I love talent as sexy to me, like Stevie Nicks. If she could sing Silver Springs to me, you know, I don't care how heavy she is. I don't care if she's older. That song just really hits my whole self spirit. And that is somebody else I'd probably want to sit down with as well. But
for me, you know, for me, it's Helen Mirren. If it was an older person, you know, because she's got that sass, you know.
I'm in complete agreement with her. That is one sexy woman because she has confidence in who she is. She's even been naked. She doesn't care. She's another one. She's an auteur. She's really, really at the top of her game. I agree with that.
Well, on that note, when you were a kid, who was your celebrity crush?
Farrah Fawcett.
And of course, you had to have the poster, right?
I had the poster, and then she ended up doing my movie, The Love Master.
Really?
So I was rehearsing with her in a car, in a SUV, and just the two of us. And I was practically calling her Miss Fawcett. You know, thanks for doing my movie. Really appreciate it. You know, I'm a big admirer of yours and long time. And she goes, oh, shut up. I'm just here because I want to know if that Love Master is real. And she reaches over and, I mean, there was no horn in my crotch. I'm not Carrot Top. She reached over and grabbed my junk. And what was sad about this, Mark, is I was not ready for my close-up because I was so nervous. I practically had an innie in my crotch. And I was so nervous. And then I was ready for my close-up, and she wasn't. I could not believe, you know, she did it for like $100. I think she did this for it.
God, that is such a cool experience to have that person you can grow up.
That's pretty cool. Like my lifetime crush, and here she was grabbing my junk. So, I'd say that's the one.
Now, as we're wrapping up the questions, definition of a perfect day for you. Get up. What's the arc of that perfect day for you?
Well, I really love watching my kids sleep. So they would still be asleep and I would go and I peek in them. And I just see these beautiful, innocent faces just in dreamland. And that's one of my starts of a day that I absolutely love. Connecting with others, you know, however that may be, really nice connections. How are you? Here's some, you know, share some wisdom with them, share some something I read, some meme or whatever it is. Share some laughs. That's a real big one for me. Getting together with friends with no pomp and circumstance, just getting together and sharing with one another, you know, who we truly are. I mean, that's my great day.
It comes down to connection and laughter a lot of what you're saying. I dig it. Yep. And now, if you're on 1 year exotic island, you can bring one CD or album, one album, and one movie. One for 1 year. What are you? What's the album and movie you're going to bring with you?
Wow. You know, I can watch Braveheart over and over again. You know, I like epics. You know, Godfather's in there. You know, I mean, I love epic movies. So I'd say Braveheart sounds weird for a comedian that loves to laugh. Not, there was no laughs in there except when they do something with their skirts, but that's about it. And album, I guess the best of the Eagles.
Really, it's not Bruce Springsteen.
That's a good point. The problem with Springsteen is, it would have to be a best of.
Yeah.
Because there's so much. That is weird that I didn't say him, but I love the harmonies, and Springsteen doesn't really have those.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, I love harmony, and I think it's so beautiful the way they harmonize, even though they were not harmonious as people. Glenn Frey and so on. They were at odds, Don Felder. But to listen to that guitar riff on Hotel California, that's something I could listen to over and over again. I mean, the extended version. So they have so many hits that are it's diverse. Their music is very diverse.
So you know what? The last two questions are 16 years old. You're jumping in the DeLorean. What's that one piece of advice you're going to go back in time and give yourself?
I'd say it's to find my true spirit. The answers are spiritual, not visual, not anything on the outside. That constantly regroup in that way, in a way of significance with a higher source, and tap into that. As opposed to the stuff, you know, look, I've had the Emmys, I've got Comedian of the Year, all these awards. I would like to say that my best trophy was the horse's ass trophy I got at my ex-wife's family reunion. I earned that. I earned that horse's ass trophy. But
I'm and by the way, that's something I would love to get.
I know. I'm so sorry about that I brought that up. I didn't want to make you jealous. But I truly earned it. But that is significant to say that the other thing, the big lesson in the DeLorean is going back is be okay with the failures. Lean into them. You know, I teach this all the time is like that's the funniest stuff is when you can admit your faults and your failures. Don't try to be something that I'm not. I kept pursuing things and stuff. And I will tell you this, the loneliest night of my life was winning the Comedian of the Year at the American Comedy Awards. Loneliest night of my life. It was so filled with shame. I was shamed, literally. It was just, I had a target on my back at that time. And all the things I thought it would achieve were the opposite.
And that's a common thing with a lot of people I've heard. It's that when you think you've reached the mountaintop, really, it's all this other stuff that really is of more substantive value. You know, the awards and all stuff in and of themselves don't hold the value. But, you know, like you talk about friends back home and family and the things that you do hold. You know, so, you know, really kind of finding who you are sooner than later. And that's something we're always doing. Yeah.
That's exactly right. That's when you're jumping in DeLorean, that's what you do. You get into your higher purpose, your highest self, your source energy, your genuine energy flow. That's what you go into, not someone else's. No agents and producers and fear-based people and parties and religions. Just dive as deep as you possibly can into your own essence, your true self, which is joy and laughter and light and levity.
Indeed. And last question, who, if you had a choice of anybody, when it's time for the Craig Shoemaker documentary, who's narrating it for you?
Well, you know, everybody wants Morgan Freeman. Let me give you my Morgan Freeman. Andy Dufresne left Shawshank Prison wearing nothing but a set of mother prison clothes and an old rock hammer nearly worn down to the nub. I would want him doing my March of the Shoemakers. there's no better narrator than him or James Earl Jones, but Yeah. I mean, I think that's, Liev Schreiber, you know, maybe I would like him to narrate all my bad sports moments, because it's the opposite of him narrating all these documentaries and, you know, watching athletes and stuff. I would love to have all of my non-achievements all put in one.
Yeah, he's knocking it out of the park. Yeah, with those mattress store commercials. He just that dry, just kind of humor thing he's got going on is just spot on. But my friend, I appreciate you more than you know spending time with me. This is great. Official very first episode, of course. Thank you again. Your generosity with your time is more appreciated than you know.
No problem, bro.
Okay, I told you he was a cool guy, right? Craig Shoemaker, the Love Master. Don't forget YouTube. Check out the Love Master. You know, back about 20 plus years ago, my best friend Roger and I were watching Craig at a comedy show. You know, I knew there was something special about Craig because my friend Roger, when I turned around at the improv to look at him, he was turning red. I realized he hadn't taken a breath. And I don't know how long. He was laughing so hard. So that is a Jedi skill. And Craig Shoemaker, a solid citizen. Love talking to him anytime I have an opportunity. And thank you again for checking out this debut episode of Story and Craft. I am so happy to have you here. This is something special I've been working on. Great, great guests are coming. Really intriguing people. So come on by, check it out each week. Don't forget you can subscribe on your favorite podcast app. I do encourage you to do so. And also, we have a really cool way for you to sign up for the newsletter at storyandcraftpod.com. Once again, storyandcraftpod.com. Now, when you get there, you can also leave me a voicemail. Kind of cool, huh? Shoot me a note. It's cool if you have any comments about the show. And of course, if you want to follow me on social media, both Instagram and Twitter, you can follow me at Air Preston. That's AirPreston, Air Preston. Story and Craft is on Instagram. Go to Story and Craft Pod. On Twitter, Story Craft Show. And of course, again, you can find those links at storyandcraftpod.com. All right, that's it. I'm going to get on out of here and let you enjoy the rest of your day. Come on back next week. Next Tuesday, we will have a brand new show. Great guest right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story. Come on.